Welcome back to BSC by Design, a podcast about transforming healthcare educational and research facilities through expert design and insight. I'm your host once again, Brian Moore. I'm very excited to kick off a mini-series as BSA celebrates the firm's 50th anniversary. BSA was founded in July 1975 by Dwight Boyd, Dick Sobre, and Dick Radcliffe in Indianapolis, and was unique in bringing architects and engineers together into one firm. Over the years, Boyd, Sobre, and Associates morphed into BSA Design, BSA Life Structures, and now BSA. In this episode, we're going to take a look at the origins and history of the firm with three of BSA's earliest leaders, Dick Sobre, Don Altmeyer, and Keith Smith. A quick word about Dwight Boyd and Dick Radcliffe. Dwight was a mechanical engineer, and he led the MEP engineering group within BSA. Dick Radcliffe was a structural engineer and, as such, led BSA's civil and structural engineering groups, as well as being responsible for the quality, documentation, and construction implementation. Our guests, again, are Dick Sobre, Don Altmeyer, and Keith Smith. Dick Sobre is an architect and was a founding planning principal of BSA and is retired. Don Altmeyer is an architect and was a founding design principal of BSA and retired after 40 years. Don held every position in the corporation and served as a principal in charge for healthcare and university-based research projects, as well as overseeing the planning and implementation of the Midfield Terminal at Indianapolis International Airport. Don graduated from the University of Cincinnati with a Bachelor of Science degree in architecture, and he was a fighter pilot in the United States Air Force from 1971 until 1977. Keith Smith, although not one of the founding partners, is an architect and former director of architecture, former president, former chief strategy officer at BSA, and was a member of the board of directors, where he held the roles of executive vice president, vice chairman for over a decade. He currently serves as principal in charge at BSA and Cures Design, a joint venture partnership between BSA, CSO, and Ratio for the design, planning, and project management of the IU Health New Downtown Hospital in Indianapolis, which is now under construction and will be completed in late 2027. Keith received both his Bachelor of Science in Architecture and his Master's in Architecture from the University of Michigan. He is a member of the AIA and the CHA. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. I really appreciate you all joining me, Dick, Don, Keith. Thanks. I thought it would be great to have a conversation. We're doing a series here about BSA's 50th anniversary, and so I thought it would be fitting to kick off this little mini-series with a conversation about the origins and history of the firm. So, Dick, let's start with you. What led to BSA's founding, and what was your vision for the company?
Well, the short answer was I quit my job. I had a wife and three kids, and survival was the simple answer. The longer answer was I had 4 years of experience with a firm in Indianapolis, and they did some healthcare. Actually, they didn't recognize what they had in healthcare, but they pursued churches, schools, other projects, which I was not interested in. And they really never understood the importance of healthcare as a specialty. So that was pretty frustrating to me. And the other factor was the no control over subcontracting independent engineers, interior designers, structural engineers, construction management, the whole thing. And I was putting together a whole package that we could deal with the client and solve all the problems.
Don, what were the early days of the company like?
A lot of hard work. You know, I can't count the hours. You know, Dick had a family, and I didn't have a family yet, and still too many hours. And, you know, I'm still in the Air National Guard, too. Complicated it, but, you know, we shared offices with Dwight Boyd, Boyd Engineering. And there's really two phases of that. We used Boyd Engineering, obviously, systems engineering, but then went to the real phase was at 75. Dick, who owned the company, totally merged with Dwight. Actually, Dwight merged with Dick in terms of the way that the accounting went, but that would have formed the firm in 75, that then things took off and began to grow. But we were sort of one job at a time in those days, whereas today there's a million jobs going on. And so we focused on this job, that job, then that job, and that job. And so it was a little bit more survival of the fittest at the time, but we just didn't have work that rolled over and over and over as much until the firm was built. And Dick was out there. He was at all the hospitals, and the rest of us were trying to produce it.
Well, I would say that we couldn't have gotten to where we are now without you guys starting off with one job at a time and doing it really, really well. So thank you for that. Keith, you joined BSA in the early 80s, not too far into the firm's history, and you've been here for over 40 years. How has the company evolved, in your opinion, since its founding? Any major milestones that stick out?
Well, there are two or three milestones that came to mind. My first project at BSA was Riley Children's Hospital for Indiana University, working with Dawn. Of course, now that's IU Health. Riley was the first of many projects for IU, and through that work, BSA gained the experience of not only healing projects, but also learning and discovery projects, all within an academic medical center environment. To me, this was the beginning of the three market segments, healing, learning, discovery, that have remained the focus and the cornerstone of the firm through the history and still active today. I would say that all of that work, similar to Riley and the academic medical centers, you know, is complex, multidisciplinary, expertise-based requirements for work that really help solidify a more overarching mission to the work. Of course, our mission statement today is creating inspired solutions to improve lives. That mission or philosophy, if you will, I think continues to serve BSA and its clients well. Part of the vision of the founders is that the firm would live beyond the first generation, and we've got the first generation with us, so they can certainly speak to that better than I can.
Right.
But when Dawn and Dick decided to expand the ownership model, the firm accelerated its growth in clients, revenue, and also individual ownership. We grew to just over 70 owners, and in late 2017, we decided to continue our growth by transitioning into a 100% employee-owned ESOP. This transition allowed us to maintain control and leadership of the company, as well as provide growth opportunities for all the employees.
What factors do you feel like led to the earlier continued success of BSA?
Well, first of all, when Altmaier showed up, he was the best in our class. That was a pretty good incentive. Then Radcliffe, when he came aboard, between the four of us, to me, that was a pretty good engine to start the process. It gave everybody confidence. We had some things to work out, obviously, between the various principals and the various professionals, but it all worked out and we struggled through it and made our way forward.
We had four different people, four different roles in the company. And reflected before, you know, today you have meetings with 200 people. And we had lunch at Denny's, four of us, to figure out who's going to do what next. But I think the key of the fact that there's two engineers and two architects. And we always took engineering very seriously. And even today is even more serious with all the systems and so on. And right. We always made a point of keeping that balance. And even growing in different markets didn't affect that balance. And as I told others, you know, my experience in the Air Force told me it wasn't just about the guys flying airplanes. It was the people who kept the airplanes in the ground, you know, the engine guys, the landing gear guys, the armors, so on. And so we understood that all the people, the production people, were probably more important than marketing and even planning. Getting the job done, getting a good balanced product was key. And I think people have always respected BSA, probably some of the most well-coordinated projects around.
And we still hear that today, right? Keith, how about you? You had a different vantage point being at the beginning of your career. What do you think's carried through?
Yeah, I was just obviously starting a career, but as an employee, at least in the early years. And Don kind of hinted to this, so our response, Brian, is going to kind of build on something he said. As a young person, I was really blind to corporate structure at BSA to the point that it existed.
Right.
I'm sure that there were titles, but from my seat, what I saw was four people working hard to build a business and find a way to make their employees successful. The focus on growing the business and serving clients was more important than corporate structure and titles. And that's a philosophy that I think has served us well.
Yeah. And you just mentioned employees. How important was employee engagement in the firm and how did you manage it?
Totally. Like I said, we depend on every person. to do their job. And the other thing is we relied on them. We told people they had as many degrees in architecture as I did, or they had as many degrees in engineering as Dwight or Dick Radcliffe had, and to use those. And so we weren't really like hounding over people, you know, do this right, do that right. We relied on people, and they responded, and they liked that. The other part, in terms of Keith referred to growing ownership, he referred to the first generation. I was sort of the first generation and a half, because the age gap between Dick and Dwight and Dick Radcliffe and me, there was a 6-year span. So for a little while, I seemed like I was on my own. And one of the reasons we expanded ownership is because I realized I needed some partners to buy these guys out when the time came. And it worked really well. As Keith reflected, we got up to 80 at one point. And ownership was a real part, important part, because people wanted to own something. Just like the ESOP has really made that possible. People were far more devoted to something that they were part of. And so, that we spread the ownership, we spread responsibility.
You know, after the original four came in, we were really blessed to get some really young talent to come in from Ball State, from Michigan. I don't know how Keith got taken there from Michigan. I don't recall, but we had a lot of good people, a lot of guys that were willing to learn, and you were not afraid to take out to a client that they were all exposed to the client and got to listen to the applause as well as the criticism. And I think they all learned, which was what we all had to do. So just trust in each other. And it was a team effort.
Keith, what was your perception of some of the employee engagement?
Well, I think in general, everybody bought into the mission that Dwight, Dick, Don, and Dick had set forward. You know, everybody had a kind of a can-do attitude. And if in the early years, you know, people always say, well, what's your job description? Not to pick on Don, but he would tell me my job description was as he defined on any given day. But, it just kind of set the tone of the attitude, if you will, about come to work, work hard, serve your clients well, and the firm will take care of you. And it always did. And when we have new people come in the firm, we used to have this thing called a passport. We don't do that today, but people would come around.
I've heard of this. Yeah.
And you'd have a little discussion with new employees, and they'd always would ask me, well, what do I need to do to be successful at BSA? And I'd say, well, because I remember asking my professor that before I left school, and he didn't have an answer for me. But I would always tell these people, you know, I found that the people that are self-motivated at BSA tend to do better than others that wait for strict definition, if you will. Right. And because there's always been a chance, an opportunity, and the firm would let you go as far as you were willing to take yourself to some degree. I probably was out over my skis a bunch of times, and I didn't always make the best decisions, but, you know, the firm still supported me. If there was something to be fixed, we got fixed and we moved on.
What specific habits contributed to your success? And, you know, I heard you guys talk a little bit about this in Engage, but I want to dive into a little bit more in terms of, was it intentional that you were building these habits to make it part of the BSA culture? So just what habits contributed to your success?
Well, the only thing I really saw as a habit that we had to get used to was being an advocate for the client. The client was, there was always a delay, a potential delay in project decision-making, and something was always behind that, whether it was the Joint Commission, whether it was the Board of Health, whether it was the fire marshal issue. And we learned to step up and help the clients to move through that before we could define what the project was eventually going to be or how we were going to solve the problem. Many times I got calls to go deal with the fire marshal on a certain issue for a hospital that we weren't even working with. But we eventually worked with them then.
All right.
Because we solved the problem for them. I think the advocacy part is still an important ingredient. I don't know about today how all those relationships work and don't work, but back then that was a big problem.
He pointed out, you know, we solved problems that weren't even our problems sometimes, because we had this relationship with clients. And Keith talked about IU and how important IU was, because they really took us from healthcare into research, into the learning environment. But our first job was actually because Dwight Boyd was trying to promote BSA. Well, actually, that time Boyd Engineering or maybe Boyd Sober Associates. And there was a chilled water problem. Chilled water line broke at the campus in Bloomington. And Dwight helped solve the problem. And that's when Terry Claybach decided that Dwight Boyd was a pretty good engineer and somebody he could rely on. And they looked at us all through the years. You know, we never marketed to Indiana University. And I can't tell you how many $100 million worth of projects we did back when $100 million was a lot of money. But they just relied on us for any complex project that they couldn't hand off to some national firm. But it really worked well. But we took that attitude with every client. If we were somewhere and there was some issue, we'd tell them what our opinion was and help them because we saw them as our partners and we wanted to be their partners.
Just a couple of add-ons to that. And both Dick and Don have already said this, but I'm going to say it one more time. It was always clear that clients come first. For most of the history of BSA, corporate leadership was really an added responsibility. Everyone was an architect or an engineer first and foremost. And project work for clients was the highest priority. And everybody understood that. You know, sticking with the people side, people have always been one of the best differentiators of BSA in our industry, at least in my opinion. Their expertise and commitment stand out time and time again. Mm. Dwight, Dick, Don, and Dick get credit for finding and training their replacements as leaders. And our current firm leadership is doing the same now. I think over time, and it's still true today, you know, providing people with the latest technology and training has really been a key to our success. BSA has always resourced its people very well for you to go and do your job. Again, best service to the client is the underlying premise there.
You mentioned training your replacement. It's true. Like when you're in a leadership position, that is part of the gig, right? Finding and training somebody who can eventually take your place.
One of the things it's come up over time a little bit. I don't know how the firm looks at it today, but we literally had a moment of discovery at sort of a planning retreat where all of a sudden we realized in the three things you've heard before, people, process, purpose. And I'd like to use an example. We had a really large project at IU, and we couldn't figure out why it wasn't going well. We had four principals on this job. Well, we had the wrong principals. And we discovered that there are different kinds of people. There's a real diversity, and using diversity in a very positive term here. People are different. There's purpose people, process people, and people. And you had to have that.
Yes.
And we did an exercise. Everyone had to tell, you know, put on a coat, what do you think you are? And some people had a total misunderstanding of what their strengths were compared by others. And we actually focused people. If we went to an interview, we always be sure we had all three types because there's all three types of clients in the room. And they would remarkably, relationship would form right away. Obviously, the people person would, you know, start talking. And purpose person like me was get this done. But people learned what their strengths were as in addition to being architects and engineers and designers.
That's interesting because we still use a lot of that today with culture index profiling and Gallup strengths and trying to, you know, self-awareness.
Myers-Briggs and all that stuff is a little complex, but people process and purpose. The perfect story is we had the gal who was sort of our head janitor at the time, or these, would come in there and she saw that my sign said purpose one day. She said, what's that mean? And I told her. She worked at Riley Hospital at night. And next day she told me, she came back, she said, I told everybody about that and we all knew what we were. They're people, process, or purpose. And so it's a very simplified way of strengths.
Well, it sounds like you guys are on the cutting edge of that. That's for sure. Speaking, this sounds a little bit to me like one of the strategies, but what other critical strategies did you guys pursue and what were some of the risks that you experienced and which ones were worth it, maybe which ones weren't?
Well, two I can think of. First of all, I think you have to know where we began. We were doing healthcare projects at $47 a square foot. Just to give you some sense of what we were dealing with back then. And that was deemed to be too expensive by the government because the government was paying for much of the hospital construction through Hill-Burton funds. And the Hill-Burton funds were eliminated at the same time we were beginning this firm. Then along came the HSAs. They were trying to control costs, the certificates of need, trying to control costs. How has that all worked out since, you know, 50 years? We're still, I think you're probably still fighting controlling costs in healthcare. What it brought into our system was the need to plan, need for planning in a professional way. Again, that was, planning was an extension of being an advocate to move through these processes that we are, that we had to deal with to help the client move through them. Altmaier probably remembers the planning document we had to prepare for Charleston Area Medical Center. Uh-huh. The other factor was our strategy was distance was not going to be a factor. We were going to be able to go wherever the need was. And that took a little effort in some people's minds that we were going to have to travel from Indianapolis to Elkhart, from Indianapolis to Evansville. And oh my goodness, Indianapolis to Charleston, West Virginia. You know, just like any problem, you find a solution. There's a solution waiting for it. Altmaier was the solution for that long travel. He was a pilot. So made it easy. Those two factors, I think, or two strategies were important to expand our reach.
And planning was the difference. There's no question about it, because there were a lot of people around, you know, and at the time we were doing healthcare, our competitors were all national. There were no real other, there were a couple of leftover hospital firms, but they couldn't compete with us locally. And so we were measured up against the national firms that kept coming in. And we were never quite big enough and didn't have the credit portfolio. But planning was made a heck of a way we got in there and had at least had the first shot at getting the projects. And we got our share up to the point where even clients knew what our capacity was. And right. We were always stretched thin. The other part I would say, we were never overstaffed in our history. We were always working overtime. We were all doing all kinds of jobs. One of the things that I always think of is years and years, both Dick and I had drawing boards, and back when drawing was the thing, in our offices. And that I think that delivered a message that if there's a deadline on, we did whatever it took to get projects done. So, but it started, the big distinguished, besides the strong combination of architecture and engineering and design, planning was their difference.
Well, I can personally attest to what Don said, because I remember him coming back from dinner helping me draw and finish a project more than once. Maybe I was just slow, but the point was, you know, it was all about delivering quality work for the client. It wasn't about who's who. So that definitely is a cultural element that has stayed for a long time. In terms of a couple of different things that maybe Dick and Don haven't talked about yet, our geographical expansion has had a lot of rewards. It's had a few drawbacks. Mm-hmm. It's been a learning process for sure. But if there's one thing that's maintained a constant, all our successful expansions have been built around quality people and areas of growth. It's to some degree almost that simple. I think we've learned that whether it's organic growth or merger and acquisition, they're all good models. You don't apply only one and every time.
Right.
But again, it's really all about the people. During my time in firm leadership, I really felt like the business development process changed for us. Maybe the recession helped bring on the necessity of that. But when the phone quits ringing, you want to figure it out pretty quick. As a result, I'd say our business development practices have become more standardized, a little more, there's more process to it than yep. there used to be. More disciplined, I guess, is the best way to say that. But there's one thing, despite all that process, there's one thing that's really not changed over the years, and that's really people's personal relationships with clients. Mm-hmm. Those were certainly important for building the business, and they're still important today. And so we still put high value on those.
Let's talk about how did each of you measure success?
Well, there was really only one thing that mattered to me, and that was the people I worked with. I consider Altmaier my brother. I consider everybody else that I worked with and who took a chance on their career with us as part of my family and always welcome in my home. I still remain friends on a regular basis with some clients, believe it or not, even though they were sometimes a pain in the neck, but we still just talk to each other on the phone. I think the bottom line is, and I felt it when I sat up there in Indianapolis, you know, just looking out at all the faces, that somehow you had some impact on each of those faces. And you hope that each of them understand that it takes a lot of people to succeed. It takes only one to fail. So people, 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 that's my measure of success, and they're all friends.
I measure success the same way that Dick does. When we were up there at the beginning of the 50th, that celebration, I look around that room. That was my measure of success over time. See what we started, continue to thrive. You know, going back just to how everything's changed is where we were. I actually was on AIA's Committee on Architecture for Health in the 70s. And I sat in the room, the headquarters, the boardroom, and probably 30 of the top healthcare architects at the time, guys that wrote the books, Rex Allen, guys like these, sitting in that room, and we were sort of there at the beginning. And now it's everybody's got to have their AHCA certification. That room has got about 5,000 people in it when they have those conventions. But we were sort of there at the start in that room, and they talked about an academy and all these kind of things. So you kind of measure success that way. There we are. We've grown with it. We're part of it. But then I see where it is today, I would declare success.
I look at success in a couple of different ways. I continue to be pleased when a client seeks out the firm or seeks me out personally, if you will, for planning expertise. I find it quite the compliment to assist with the strategic growth of somebody else's business. To me, that shows a high level of trust by that client to the firm and how you interact with the firm. And then the other way, I'd say, we've really been blessed of having performed over, I think for some clients, we're over 1,000 projects. Mm. And
that's a lot.
To be asked back so many times like that to continue to do work, again, shows up a high level of trust. You know, speaking about the firm itself, despite changes in client leadership, our own leadership, changing politics, changing economic times, changes in technology, the firm has always been nimble enough to change itself,
right,
to match what the client needs, to match what's going on in the industry. And again, I think that ability to morph yourself, if you will, has served as well.
Yeah, a lot of adaptability for sure. So I want to ask you each, how has the architecture and engineering industry evolved since BSA was founded? You guys had very long careers. I'm curious what that looked like.
Well, remember what I told you about hospitals being $47 a square foot.
All right. We'll start there, right?
From that point, from my perspective, I didn't learn how to use a computer until I retired. I refused to learn how to use one in the office. And it took me a year after I bought one to turn it on and learn how to use it. So,
and look at you now. You're recording a podcast over the internet, right?
Well, once there was a pride in how you drew, how you lettered, that's probably all gone. But nevertheless, I'm sure there's still pride in the documents that are prepared and the design that evolves out of the project. So, and the solutions, the problems that you've solved. I don't think that's ever changed.
I would say the way decisions are made, obviously everything's more complex. And I would comment on how drawings are produced because I'm almost as bad as Dick. At least I use the computer a little bit, but never for drafting. That's what other people, the younger people, were for. But I'd say it was decision making. When we started, Dick talked about how cheap buildings were, but it didn't matter. It meant that this hospital had 929 beds. But we met with the CEO when we were talking about a project. Same thing in West Virginia. They had 1,000 beds. We met with the CEO making decisions, or maybe an executive vice president, no lower than that.
Right.
Today, I don't know if you ever meet with the CEO. If for a while we were assigned to the supply chain management side, which was right when I decided it was time for me to go. But I'd say just how decisions are made, the quality of decisions. aren't any better today than they were back when we had no money. And everything's too complex. Something simplified, I believe.
Well, the trend towards specialization seems to continue to evolve. You know, the old term, if you will, master architect, today seems to be more of a management concept where you bring together a group of experts or consultants as opposed to personally doing all the design work yourself. Mm-hmm. So that kind of gets to the complexity factor that Don mentioned.
What do you see for the future for BSA and challenges, opportunities you see for the firm from your vantage points?
Well, judging by what you guys have done so far, I think the sky's the limit for you. But keep in mind, you each depend on each other.
And, right, that's good advice.
And that ESOP relationship, you depend on each other and make sure you're all doing the best you can do.
I second the motion, like I said.
Keith?
I think it'd be interesting to see what opportunities and challenges AI brings to our profession. Mm. The method for designing and documenting a building have changed several times in our careers. Like Dick and Don, I started on the drawing board just like they were. But I think AI will be the next major change. The speed at which decisions are made, communicated, put into action will accelerate beyond what we currently envision.
What do you hope the company will be remembered for?
That we were just a top-notch firm.
And quality of work and quality of the people, quality of the service.
You can probably tell that these two guys have mentored me for most of my career because a lot of my answers mirror their answers. But to me, high quality work and great client service. Reflecting back to our mission statement, creating inspired solutions to improve lives. You know, to me, when you stop and think about how many patients, clinicians, students, teachers, researchers perform their jobs within the facilities we help create, in term the number of people that they help heal, learn. If you'd take some time to do the math about the number of projects, the number of people
they've gone through those doors and experienced care, and
I mean, it's a pretty big number. So talk about improving lives. I think what we do every day definitely delivers on that. So
just a huge impact. Well, this has been great. I want to thank you guys for joining me. I appreciate your time and talking about BSA and its founding and its history. And I every time we're together, I enjoy talking to you guys. So thanks for coming on.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank Dick, Don, and Keith again for joining me on this episode of BSA by Design. If you want to learn more about BSA, we encourage you to visit our website at BSA. The show notes include a link to contact us for more information. And be sure to subscribe to BSA by Design on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube Music so you don't miss an episode. We've got more content and project stories to share on social media, so be sure to follow us on LinkedIn, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and X. That's going to do it for this episode. Join us again next time on BSA by Design.